I'd like to do an acknowledgement, a very somber one, not in the fashion that we generally hear at state occasion and by all those corporations, including the banks, who are so sincere when they acknowledge that this is truly Aboriginal land, land from which they...
Oh! I was just getting a fucking vibe on, thanks. Alright, so, I wasn't going to do the acknowledgement that you've heard so many times before, and the reason that I feel comfortable in not doing that acknowledgement is that one of my mentors in Marxism has told me, personally, and I quote, "It's a bunch of shit," and then says in a more scholarly way that it's a way for white people to mythologize their own compassion. So instead of doing that acknowledgement, I'll acknowledge the reason that I'm here in a silly frock, which is Professor Gary Foley is here. Many people have asked throughout Marxism, why isn't Professor Foley speaking this year? I think he just didn't fancy it. Ladies and gentlemen, go wild, go crazy for Gary Foley. This week... I have a microphone.
Do you?
Do I need one? Can you?
We can only have one of us at a time. This actually might work really well. So, here we are. Welcome to Marxism. It's quite loud. Okay. Well, thank you all for coming to this session. Thank you, Foley, for coming as well. I'm Ros Ward, and this is Helen Razor. I'm going to give Helen Razor's bio while she doesn't have a mic, because...
Don't do the fucking bio!
She told me not to because she thinks it's boring, but maybe you don't know who Helen Razor is. Helen Razor was a broadcaster, now back with the podcast, and is a writer. Her appointments in radio were previously at Triple J and the ABC Melbourne.
Sacked twice.
She's also written some books, A Short History of Stupid, co-authored with Bernard King, a work on the history of bad Western thought, shortlisted for the Russell Prize.
This is a biography that is intended for an entirely different purpose.
No, I'm enjoying it.
Essentially, I'm a cheap and nasty media whore. I'm ancient, like, I think I'm 50, something around that. And ever since I was a small fry, I have been making noise of very little consequence to audiences large and small. And I can't see very well. So if you're doing something offensive, I won't see it. And Ros has seen so many offensive things in her recent history that she's, you know, it'll be invisible to her as well. So I'm cheap and nasty. This was actually written for a very serious lecture series where there were people with letters appended to their name talking. So I was just, please don't do anything.
Excuse me, I have a BA. Thank you very much.
I believe you have a master's in gender studies too.
I do.
May we?
And then you asked me what I read for it and I couldn't answer because I didn't. So...
Gender studies can be traumatic, right?
Yeah. Actually, we need to establish... I'm just going to say this first.
This is
the most recent book of Helen Razor's. It's called Total Propaganda, Basic Marxist Brainwashing for the Angry and the Young. Nice and short title. Which is sort of how we made the connection between Helen Razor and a Marxism conference. It didn't take a genius, but... if you haven't read the book already, I highly recommend it. We have a lot of copies. Helen's also, you know, forging her own copies from the publisher, so feel free to get one. She might even scrawl in it.
I mean, it's not a very Marxist thing to do. Like, the imprimatur of the authority of the author. It's not like right on. But if it'll make you buy a fucking book,
she can do that for you. Yeah.
But that's, I mean, well, at least the money will go to SA, right?
Yeah, we chuck a bit of a margin on the books.
Yeah.
Good. Why wouldn't you? And you want to get rid of capitalism, but you can't deny its existence.
Oh, it coerces us all. And if you don't like me and you're just here to hate listen, which I know is a very real possibility, you with your mean little Twitter accounts, oh, she's looking old. Oh, I asked her a question about the transformation problem. Didn't know a thing. In advance, no. Fucking no idea. This is not, like, the serious Marxist, what the fuck are you doing here with me? Seriously, honestly. Forewarned is forearmed. What was I saying?
What we need to do, wait, this is related.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
What we agreed that we would do during this session, because I have come to know you a little bit in the last few weeks.
Yes. It's been a journey.
So, wait, I'm going. The point is,
she's come to know me, so yeah. She knows to shut me up.
So what we said we would agree in advance is a safe word, which I can say, which will trigger Helen into stopping talking, so that we can move on, you know, refocus on a particular topic.
Because I do go on.
So we thought we'd have a safe word that when I say whatever it is, Helen will stop and we can kind of redirect the conversation.
For your protection, it's kind of your safe word.
So if the violence of the ramble is too much, safe word, and we pause and then we go again. Right.
And that safe word is, I've selected it.
You have.
And shall I disclose it?
You do get to choose the safe word, yeah.
It's even triggering for me to say.
Horticultural is not.
It's even triggering for me to say, but the safe word is, and I mean, you know, anyone can feel free to yell it out at any time. The safe word is Hillary. And that will just sort of terrify me, and you know, I'll be reminded of columns by Van Badham and Laurie Penny, those well-known Marxists. Hissing's wrong. Shame, I think is better. Oh, unless you were hissing me for dissing those perfect Marxists.
No, they're agreeing.
Oh, jolly good. Oh, it's nice to be in a room full of people who largely agree. I mean, it's like a little holiday.
As long as we don't veer into Syria, we'll be fine. Okay, so I'm going to start with a couple of questions. That's actually true. So you wrote this book,
Syria. No, we won't talk about Syria.
You just keep on giving your
donations to the White Helmets. Ward?
I'm not doing that.
Sorry for this. No, I know.
So you finally got around to writing a book about Marx.
Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only when it was going to be profitable, mind.
Yeah. When it was the 100th anniversary of the Russian Revolution. Is that part?
That seemed like I'd have half a chance of getting a little bit of an advance from that.
From Alan Harvey. Yeah.
Yeah. But
why did you do that?
I've become a bit of a tedious communist in recent years. And that was just, I mean, I did my Marxy flirtation as a kiddie, read the Communist Manifesto, which should be compulsory, I think, for every 14-year-old. It should. You know, I mean, not many. I would not make many things mandatory, but that is one of them. So I had that very... you had that, if you came to Marx quite young, you know, you have the manifesto is, I mean, it's a wonderful document, right? And I know you like it too. So I had that quite sort of teenage understanding of Marx, I guess, that it was just, you know, I was yet to appreciate the dialectic. You just think of good and evil. And this, you know, conflagration between good and evil, little bit of economic theory. And then I got stung by the fucking postmodernists. Because, you see, I went to university in the 1990s. That's a terrible thing, that. I used to love it.
You've got like post-fondness
trauma. I do. I do, but I mean, apart, we can't blame the post-structuralists for chronicling their age. You know, we can't blame Foucault for everything. But, you know, what also happened to me, you know, being creates consciousness and all of that, is I was actually on a fairly good wage throughout the 1990s, and I was on a fairly good wage owing to... That was... You weren't here and you would have no idea, but I used to be culturally relevant. Many years ago, I mean, no one... They only came because they knew you were here and Professor Foley was here. I mean, so I began to get this very inflated... I mean, clearly I'm a very self-important person with dangerous levels of self-esteem anyhow. But, I mean, being in that media context and believing utterly, as many of my colleagues of that particular sector of the knowledge class do, I mean, believing in one's own importance and believing that through mass media you could change the world and you could... In short, I became quite repugnant. And then something awful happened to me and I no longer had that gig. And I had time to reassess how repugnant I had become. By which stage, happily for me, neoliberalism fucking failing. What can a girl do except return to Marxism? And so, yes, it's been, I don't know, about the last decade I've been getting up to speed. I'm still not there. As you know, I've not read Volume 2. I mean, have you seen that thing? I mean, it's full of equations. I just can't.
Talking about Volume 2 of Capital. Rick Coon is looking at me under there.
Oh, God, no, Rick's not here, is he?
Oh, yeah, just so you know, Rick Coon is under there. Rick Coon is an academic who has read Volume 2. Yes, definitely.
Rick too. Rick Coon has memorised the mega, probably in several languages, I imagine. Rick was actually very helpful with this book.
So you have read Volume 1 of Capital.
That's about so yeah, and read, three, read, but not two.
You read quite a lot of Marx in preparation for writing this book.
Yeah, like I had a serious summer of Marx.
You had a summer of Marx.
Yeah.
Would you recommend that?
Fuck no. No, like seriously, you know what happened? This is a safe space, isn't it? I actually had to go to the psychiatrist afterwards. I mean, I was medicated. And I received an email last night. I don't know if I passed it on to you, but from a bloke who listened to the podcast we did. And he said, "Well, I read your fucking book. Thanks a lot. Now I'm miserable." And if you're here, hello, because you said you had bought a ticket to in order to make yourself even more miserable, or at least find other miserable people. And to you know, unlike you, who you know has read consistently over a number of years, would I sort of return to it and try to sort of become more scholarly and felt where I was in, you know, a position to, with my popular tatty voice, which seems to appeal to some people, fuck knows why, but it does, well, I thought, well, this might be a good way to get people to read Marx. But, I mean, after that summer of, like, trying to grapple with things, it became... I was depressed. I'm genuinely depressed. Do you know, I mean, not made up depressed.
So
you're laughing at me.
I'm not.
And I'm still heavily medicated. No, it's, but it was, I guess when it comes to all at once, this realisation that social relations, you know, are relations between commodities, that everything is, well, not everything, but everything that capital touches, it changes. And so I think that's why I was quite depressed.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to say I've made a lot of other people depressed in a short space of time with this pamphlet.
So sort of the revealing of the nature of capitalism, do you think that was new to you because of reading Marx? Your understanding of capitalism?
Well,
that's the depressing thing?
I mean, it's not as though I'd never encountered the guy before, but it was. But to have it in, to realize,
form.
Yeah, to realize, and to realize that you know, a chap spent a lifetime, and that in fact, you know, some of the conclusions he proposes are in fact quite right, and the way one can be just psychologically changed by being coerced every day and sort of saying, oh fuck, yes, I did that, you know, that was something that I was that I had been you know, a defender of the status quo without knowing it, becoming utterly convinced without thinking about it that my ideas had just emerged from pure reason, and that there was this sort of like, you know, I became a very, you know, enlightenment liberal thinker. And, you know, when you know you've been doing that, particularly in a media context, no, I don't think that. So there's this popular view, and I'm sure you know it well, especially from doing gender studies. So there's very, well, yeah. A lot of your peers would have had this idea that there is a point, I promise, okay? So there's this very popular idea that we need better representation in the mainstream media to liberate people. And when you work for a long time in mass electronic media or niche internet media or tele, radio, and I've worked in all those sectors, you realise that media does not, in fact, by very virtue of the authority it has, it does not have the power to change the status quo. It only has the power to reinforce the status quo. And, you know, like the movement of any kind of good, the movement of cultural goods. And so, you know, I mean, this is in academia, like, sort of treated as fact. And I mean, there's so many media and communications departments, and they're entirely staffed by people saying, we need more strong women on TV, and we need more diverse representation. And people use the word representation to mean a range of things. Like, I mean, fuck me, I do not give a fuck if there's 50% women on Q&A. Who gives a shit? I mean, they come up with the same fucking conclusion every week. And it's this false idea of balance. You know, and one created by the ABC, and the balance that they're talking about. I mean, you know, for a start, the idea of balance is offensive and impossible, right?
Yeah.
But don't you think?
Well, yeah, in a mainstream media.
Yeah, but and this idea that if we all debate honestly and openly and by the rules of, you know, fucking what, Wesley Grammar, right? Like, that we will come up with a conclusion, and I understand that.
Reason will overcome.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I understand the conclusion that people come to. And I mean, just, I was talking to my dad, who's not a Marxist, despite my best efforts. And, you know, he said, well, I try to read both sides of media. I read The Guardian and The Australian. Oh, it's not two sides. Yeah, like, you know, like, millimeters apart, Dad, you know, but it's like, and so a lot of people believe that somewhere within the truth of these perceived extremes, which are both very liberal, that you will find, you know, you'll find some kind of balance. And with the ABC and Q&A, it's even more explicit, because the balance is the balance between the ALP and the coalition. Yeah. And I mean, what kind of balance is that? That's completely coercive. I mean, I understand how it happens because I've worked there. And, you know, you will be chased around and or sacked if you don't represent the coalition standpoint and ALP standpoint. And people need to do that in order to keep their jobs. And then what happens is people come to believe it. And people come to believe that these are extreme positions. And that, you know, if you believe that capitalism, or, you know, its latest iteration, neoliberalism, can lift all people out of poverty and is completely sustainable, and Elon Musk is going to save the world, So you can believe that, and you can hate the homosexuals, or you can celebrate the homosexuals, you know? And it's like, so that's the only difference. And if we have, and so that's what constitutes balance.
You had a debate recently in Crikey with someone who's a media professor, Lauren, what's her name?
I can't remember.
Lauren from Melbourne Uni.
Yes, thank you. Rosemore, yes,
Rose
yes, that's the one.
Collectively.
She's a frequent media and yeah. academic commentator
and
on media.
Her position was that it does matter if you have improved the representation of certain groups in the media,
yeah.
and that can change people's ideas.
But if you ask people to quantify it, they say it's intangible. We can't measure it. And it's like, well, what's the point? Why are there so many, you know, academic departments devoted to this topic? And why is this, you know, I mean, if private enterprise is so fucking efficient, you know, why is it full of companies that make false promises, such as Cambridge Analytica? I mean, the terror of Cambridge Analytica is not that they can change an election result, because I don't believe they can. I mean, you know, I'm sure many of you have had contact with people in, the political sector of the advertising world, and these people genuinely believe that they can change the world. Like, have you met these people?
No. But I have watched TV shows with them in.
But yeah. I mean, you've never talked to an advertising person or somebody who believes they have great expertise in marketing and says, well, you know, I mean, did that not happen to you throughout the whole you-know-what business, for example? Did somebody offer to do public relations for you, for example?
No,
not. Except for Ms. Rebecca Urban from The Australian.
I do my own thing. It's going around.
All right, so
no.
I mean, just so you know, like, Ros and I thought, well, what's the thing that we can talk about where I wouldn't be so tedious and actually had some knowledge, and my knowledge is about, you know, perceived media manipulation, and my hypothesis, and you would probably agree, is that media as it currently exists and is held within that. There is very little potential to transform the thinking of people, and in fact what largely does is reinforce their thinking or make them believe that they have a new kind of thinking, leaving, you know, their thinking more or less in place. You'd agree with that, right?
Yeah, I do agree with that. And I think, like, it's sort of been interesting from what I know of your journey through the media, and if we can say it in a sort of slightly binarizing way, from insider to slightly outsider.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't really have a choice. I mean, they kind of kicked me out.
I know how that works. So, you've gone on that journey at the time when there's sort of a perception of the media that it doesn't matter as much now if you're an insider or an outsider, because we've got, you know, the internet. The whole world can be a journalist and can publish online, and there are sort of proliferation of online media and blogs and sort of different stuff that people think, well, maybe that's the way to get some different ideas out there,
yeah.
that we can move things to the left, that we can change people's perceptions, because, you know, nobody watches the ABC anymore, nobody buys The Australian, so the power of the mainstream media maybe to influence things has been minimised, or it's reducing, and maybe that will be the thing that can help to change ideas.
So, I mean, perhaps the older folks here would maybe have had this perception too when you first heard of this thing called the World Wide Internet.
The information superhighway.
Yes.
Grab your keys and start the engine.
And surf the net.
Yeah.
Gonna surf the net. Have you ever seen that film with Sandra Bullock? It's so good.
I probably have.
It's because she's marvelous. She's
the best comedy actress.
No! She is! She is!
And she does play with us.
But, and, big fan of and also, she, you know, she's.
I bet you didn't think of Marxism in your discussion about Sandra Bullock.
I mean, she's fucking gorgeous breaking as you. Well, right? Like, she's hot, right? And.
If you say so.
Did you not see? Did you not see Gravity, where she's just wearing her underwear for a great deal of the film? All right. So my point was, I'm sorry. Serious, Helen. My point is, so old folks, right? This worldwide internet happens, and you think a glorious smorgasbord of information, and that still can be a possibility. But what, in fact, has occurred is the opposite. You think, oh, my goodness, you know, so many new voices will be included, and you have this kind of, like, Habermasian view of this great deliberative society where everybody has a voice. But what has occurred, and there are, you know, some works, some studies around this, is, in fact, that people have become... even more beholden to pre-existing views than they were before, which is curious. I mean, because you can get all of this stuff, you know. I mean, I'm sure most of you know that, like, for example, I mean, Marxist.org, incredible resource, and you can see extraordinary thinkers, or me, on the internet. And you meet different people, and then, you know, and it's true that emotionally your life might change and you might meet or indeed... exchange passions with somebody that you may not have otherwise. And so there's all those experiences. But in terms of the way people view the world or the way they have their ideology reinforced, the internet has been incredibly helpful in doing that. And in, you know, in recent days, what has occurred is that you know, people perhaps have become a little bit more aware of what Facebook does. Now, I don't think that Zuckerberg is going to manipulate people into thinking anything other than what is good for Facebook. But that doesn't mean that manipulation doesn't occur. So, you know, and I'm fairly certain that most people here have had some experience of Facebook, perhaps even a, you know, a long or a short period of devotion to it. Have you ever had that? Like, where you...
Where you
feel compelled, or addiction, or you live an online life.
There are a number of new conditions in the DSM in relation to online use.
The DSM.
Now I'm going on tangents.
No. Yeah. I mean, the DSM is actually really interesting.
But there's one that I have.
Which I hate the DSM. I mean, the DSM is ridiculous, of course.
Yes.
That's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, and it gets revised about once every 20 years. In the last revision, there were a number of new things that coincidentally had new drugs attached to them, and internet addiction was among them. And then also binge eating disorder is a big new one. And if you eat past the point that you're full more than four times or more a month, then you have an eating disorder. So every time I order a pizza, I have binge eating disorder.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have the phantom, the one that's like the phantom phone in your pocket. That's not any, like, you know, when you're like, is my phone in my pocket and you think it's there? And it's not there.
Yeah, I mean, so...
That's
it,
like...
Yeah.
Anyway,
Facebook can change, you know, your world on the personal level, but in terms of in terms of receiving information, so of course, you know, now it, particularly for in the so-called millennial age range, allegedly most of the news you acquire is from Facebook, and I actually do believe the research of marketing companies, because it's in their interest to know what the primary habit of younger people is, and the primary habit of younger people does appear to be that they don't go on Facebook, but that Facebook is indistinguishable from the rest of the internet, which is what, you know, Zuckerberg has always hoped. And in fact, and you probably know, I mean, if you read his delightful posts, do you ever read Zuki's posts on Facebook? There's one that you would fucking love. I don't know if you would have read it. You were probably too busy reading sensible things.
I don't post them to the top of my feed.
No, no, but I mean, there's a 6,000 word post that he wrote last year. Maybe some of you are aware of it. And it begins with, history is us building things and coming together in larger numbers. So I couldn't resist. I just screenshotted it and crossed it out and just put all existing history is the history of class struggles. No, I got it wrong because that's my Marx joke and it's about the only room that it'll get along. Didn't go well on the internet.
Hitherto.
It's in there. Yeah, whatever. And so, you know, there's a number of studies starting, you know, at the time of Twitter when people actually use Twitter. Now only journalists use Twitter. I mean, maybe some people observe Twitter, but it's usually to see journalists or politicians shit-can each other and everyone call Julian Assange a rapist. Or to, of course, watch Donald Trump. So, you know, more people now use TripAdvisor in Australia than use Twitter, which I think is interesting. Very few people actually use it. It is just journalists shit-canning each other. And I've banned myself from doing that. It's fucking fun, though. But then they answer back. Which is wrong! Don't they know my preferred mode of discourse is the monologue? No one said Hillary yet. So, you get this very small conversation between, you know, Chris Kenny and then somebody who doesn't like Chris Kenny. And it's very tempting, of course, if you're there saying, oh, you know, you're such a repugnant person and this very hyperbolic language too of you've got rape face or and shut up or I'll rape you. And I mean, I know that there's been all of this sort of media lately about these brave feminists. Who receive these threats and then they republish and amplify those threats and then they write articles about the threats that they received and they tweet about the articles that they've written about the threats that they've received and all the while you get a screenshot normalizing a rape threat, so more and more people do rape threats. And then, you know, the liberal feminist will say, and I've been attacked. Ergo, this is proof that feminism is needed. And it's like, you know, it's crazy to me to use yourself as a media provider when you're supposed, even if you're writing opinion, you know, you're supposed to be writing about something other than yourself. And so increasingly what you get is this kind of like pseudo leisure class or so there's people who can afford to write or to broadcast for extraordinarily small fees you're paid now. Or there's people who are just writing, churning shit out all the time, myself included, because, you know, you need to in order to live. And between those sort of two groups of people, you just tend to pursue and you're forced to sort of like relentlessly go on social media, create a spectacle for others. And, you know, and then everyone still thinks that, you know, social media is free, even though, and it occurs on Facebook too, to a lesser degree, even though, or rather to a different degree. So even though there's dominant voices having particular discussions which replicate themselves all the time, that you may, just as any individual, feel a real compulsion for doing them. And then, of course, what happens on Facebook is that, you know, algorithmically, you'll tend to receive posts, or you will receive posts that they know you'll already agree with, and then, you know, and posts that you don't agree with are likely to recede from view. So there's various forms of manipulation, which occurs a little bit on purpose, and we can see that social media, which again is the place that that most people under 40 get their news, we can see direct manipulation. Say on Facebook, you know, after the $100,000 worth of ads that may or may not have come from Russian accounts.
Fireworks.
You know, that apparently swung the US election.
Should we be alarmed or alert? There's no one up there. It actually does sound like fireworks, though.
We'll have to project, dear. Project. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. Can everyone hear my?
Yeah.
God, that's depressing. You know, blah blah blah. Status quo reasserts itself. Work the rest out yourselves, kids.
There's a quote. There's a quote for that as well. The ruling ideas.
In every epoch.
Are the ideas
of the ruling class. German ideology?
Yeah. German ideology. Yeah, no, that's what we said, Rick. We were right.
Rick, that's what I see. You know I know that one, Rick. Is there any chance we're going to get microphones back, or am I going to keep having to talk like the fishwife I truly am? All right, well,
cool.
John, got it. Jolly good.
last sort of topic area. I just like to have broad areas and see where we go. How we worked it. Before we open up for questions and general heckling, is liberal feminism.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I suppose I'm a lady. And as such, I'm a, you know, well, I guess, I mean, I don't even know if I would call myself a feminist anymore because, I mean,
Because you're a Marxist.
Well, yeah, and the term is rendered meaningless. It's just, I mean, you know, I mean, I used to say it because it used to shit people. And then the minute that it didn't anymore, I felt that it had outlived its value. But, I mean, really, you know, I mean, you look at the liberal feminist and her campaign in the media to have the word feminist accepted. It's like, what the fuck? You want the word feminist, you want what I presumed was, something that at least signified some tendency to revolt. You want this word to be accepted by everybody? And, you know, you see in individual celebrities and what have you demonized for failing to call themselves a feminist. I mean, you know, like Demi Moore, who starred in a wonderful film called Striptease, there is a long screed in Vanity Fair about how terrible it is that Demi Moore does not call herself a feminist. And, you know, I've read things in The Guardian, the Australian Guardian, about how it's terrible that Julie Bishop doesn't identify as a feminist. And you get the same fucking thing over and over again. You stand on the shoulders of giants. Our foremothers threw themselves in front of horses for you. And it's just, you know, I mean, ridiculous, you know. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you know, we know, of course, that, I mean, that the Marxist women of the time were not fond of those suffragettes at all, were they?
Well, there was debates about, yeah.
It's the internet age. Get hyperbolic.
Oh, hyperbolic. Yes, they hated them. They didn't. No, Marx is scared about suffrage, but
yeah,
the strategy of the suffragettes and direct action. Anyway, this is a random topic.
No. But I mean, the point that I'm making is that it is, you know, an old tension between the, you know, the establishment feminist and then, you know, the socialist. And a lot of those women in Australia, I mean, there is a direct line from, you know, the temperance union. And not that there's anything wrong with sobriety, of course. I engage in it myself at times. Clearly not at the moment. I'm just high on life. High on Marx. Woo! So, I mean, this tension is really, you know, replayed throughout, you know, at least the last 100 years. And there's a group of, you know, paternalistic, or maternalistic, I guess, Carolyn Chisholm types who want to waggle a finger or two and you know, and nicely and feel sorry for the blacks and the working class women and the black, you know that. I mean, I need a microphone. I'm losing my mind. I was just going to mention Spivak, which might not be the correct context to mention Spivak, but you know the great...
When is the right context?
Well, you know that great Spivak quote about, you know, when she's talking about the imposition of white imperial rule on brown populations, and then she has that... I mean, it is a really good quote about, which I'm probably going to completely forget at the moment, but which is... white men saving brown women from brown men, and this, you know, this is a real thing with white or liberal feminism of the moment. It's white women saving brown men. Brown, you work the rest out yourself. It's white women oftentimes saving brown women from brown men, which is also, you know, an old attention as well. And even if they say I'm intersectional and not racist, there is always that kind of like element of maternalism that sort of goes back to the temperance history, and which is really the division between, and the huge division between a liberal and a Marxist. A liberal believes that education, better media, you know, some Habermasian notion of deliberation where we all have a voice on the internet is the thing that will save the world. I mean, you know how liberals fucking love education, right? Just, you know, but the kind of education that they're arguing for needs to be taken into account. I mean, what they're essentially arguing for now is vocational education, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it has always been the kind of education that my safe word was arguing for. I mean, you know, all this shit about her being a great feminist fighting for little kiddies, you know, I mean, she was on the board of Walmart when she was the First Lady of Arkansas. Sorry, I have a bit of a Hillary obsession.
Go for it.
When she was on the First Lady of Arkansas, she was advising a bill on education and working with Walmart to fund that state education. And essentially what was to be done was to produce good workers for Walmart. And this is, do you know Liz, Liza Featherstone's stuff? If you're particularly interested in that, there's a great chapter in the book called False Choices, which was a group of women who got together, wrote a book about all the shit things Hillary had done. So for me, it was kind of like light reading. It was really fun. It was like, elaborate my fucking hatred. But you see this, and I mean, you know, you must have been shocked by the defence also of people who actually call themselves Marxists, saying that, you know, we must defend this woman, and there are only two choices, as if, well, isn't Marxism one of them? You know, I mean, like, politics just doesn't belong to those people, and it's just this incredible gradualism, and I mean, I don't know whether I've been like completely blind and deaf to it all my life because I've been so fucking full of myself and my important job as a liberal media educator, probably. But, I mean, have people always been fucking like this? Like, have they always thought that they can educate others and that, you know, that there didn't need to be some kind of, like, equal distribution of power to ensure that there would be an equal distribution of power? I mean, it's always been like that, hasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's more concealed. You can see it revealing itself in certain moments. And one recently, which I super loved, is that now, like, more people see that Justin Trudeau is an absolute unmitigated fuckwit. And that was super fun, right?
Yeah.
And
no amount of crying will change your mind.
He can wear all the national dress of the world.
Boo-hoo, like, you do something. What?
Yeah.
The Prime Minister of Canada.
And, yeah, I mean, and he's
it's
such
very
a...
very hard.
And, I mean, a lot of stuff that Trudeau gets up to is, like, I don't know, seems to be really emblematic of what a lot of... And the work of the elite media knowledge class is very, you know, almost identical to the work of media. And, in fact, of course, as you know, they work a great deal of the time in tandem. And, you know, for a long period, especially after Trump, you know, Trudeau is this great hope and, you know, Macron is this great hope and we can return to the centre and we can return to a sort of a compassionate neoliberalism as if such a thing were possible, despite the fact that you know and I know and I'm sure you know, otherwise you wouldn't be here, that faith in major parties is at an all-time low and faith in mainstream media is at an all-time low. And, you know, I mean, they were really reliant on Trudeau and, you know, you see people that you know quite well and have worked with and even respect and have even read Marx or might even call themselves Marxist at times saying, oh, you know, he's a beacon of hope. I mean, what the fuck? Like, you know, he's ideology in action. You know, I mean, he says, he tweets out, he sends public messages about Canada's kindness to asylum seekers. And, you know, in fairness, per the size of their population, you know, they do now receive 40,000, which is good. You know, that's 40,000 people who won't die in fucking misery, so that's good. But now everybody who comes is in detention and will never get residency, temporary or otherwise, in Canada, in part because Justin Trudeau keeps making these public presentations about how all are welcome in Canada, which is a kind of a really strange... reversal of what Dutton does, but it has the same result. I'm going to look compassionate in order that I cannot be, and I'm going to look like I completely lack compassion in order that I can completely lack compassion. But it, I mean, and it doesn't matter. And I'm sure that Trudeau means very well, just as I'm sure that Dutton probably means to be what he knows to be very well, which is a Queensland copper.
Vice squad.
And was he in the Vice squad?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. See, that's the other thing. That's the other thing about the liberal feminist, right? She loves a bit of Vice. Like, this whole media effects, like good media, and, yeah, and good representation can change the world. Well, it's kind of like the obverse of... And you guys know, right, that we have a lot, that, I mean, the internet kind of broke it a bit, but in Australia we are the, you know, the Western liberal democracy with the most censorship, right? Like, we made the first feature film, we also banned the first feature film, which was the true story of the Kelly gang. Like, Deakin fucking loved to ban some shit. Like, huge library, that guy, right? Like, big library, didn't want the people to read the corrupting French novel. And, you know, the Temperance Union the ladies of the Temperance Union were very keen on his view of keeping bad things away from people. And it's just like this bizarre third-person effect. It's like, I remember hearing a story about, do you, any of you guys old enough to remember Senator Brian Harradine? So who's, well, you weren't here.
No.
So who's a contemporary equivalent for the younger folks here of Harradine?
Cory
Minotti, kind of. But, like, Harradine, I think, was, like, a genuinely deluded Christian. And Harradine was very anti-porn. And I knew somebody who had to sit with Harradine watching X-rated videos. It was a lady. And she was caught between, like, extreme painful nausea and fucking hilarity. Because, you know, they're watching, like, you know, ATM, which has got nothing to do with a bank teller, and discussing its corrupting influence. And this image actually always stayed with me of this sort of upstanding Tasmanian god-botherer, you know, deciding what the Australian folks could and could not access. And I sort of think of a lot of liberal feminists in the same way. Like, even though some of them might be really sex positive and shit, you know, and, like, you know, radical queer and have strange sex and I'm unashamed and, you know, all of that, whatever. Like, fucking, you know, like, having radical sex makes you radical. It doesn't. You know, I mean, really, I mean, have it by all means. But, you know, your fucking climax is not a political statement, right? I mean, seriously, you know, I mean, you could shove something in every hole. But it's the same. But no more obscenity. But it's the same thing, you know, with the liberal feminists. It's like I imagine them as Brian Harradine looking at the harmful thing and deciding whether or not the, you know, the population should or should not watch Married at First Sight. Like, can we enjoy this ironically, or must it be stopped? And you know, I mean, actually, and this liberal feminism, like, is a fucking virus. Like, it really is virulent. You know, I mean, and it's part of the, and my distaste for it is, you know, part of the reason I'm so broke. Like, you know, if you could just say a little bit more, like, oh, yes, you know, I really think that this famous woman's struggle in the newsroom is one that we can all learn from, and we should be inspired by the fact that she got a $250,000 settlement for getting the sack while she was pregnant. And it's like, what the fuck? You know, I mean, who among us is going to get that kind of settlement? I mean, who among us even has a permanent job? I fucking haven't had a permanent job since Puss Was Kitten, which is like 1998. You know, so there is just a complete reluctance to look at the background, to, you know, look at the social relations that govern most people's lives. And it's just, what the fuck? You can go to the ABS too. I mean, you'll do it every time you want to make a case about, you know, how every man has raped 17 women at least thrice in his life or whatever. Like, you'll find the ABS for that, you know, but you will not... you won't look at what the typical wage is or whatever. I mean, this is not to diminish, of course, the fact that fucking sexual violence is an enormous problem. But it's like, if you can go to, you know, what we must presume is a reasonably reliable site for data to make a case and interpret a case in the way you want, well, look at how people are living, for God's sake, and not just at the media that you produce. And so we have people convinced of their own power, asserting their own power, making us believe that, yes, we do live in an entirely post-material age. And they do this on the right every bit as much as they do it on the so-called left. And so on the one hand, you have the, you know, not that anybody reads it, but you and I have discussed this. It's still a very important ideological tool. So you have the Australians saying, political correctness, it's gone mad. And on the other hand, you have, what we need to solve all these problems is more political correctness. And that's about as far as the argument goes, and that's as revolutionary as our, you know, as our so-called left media is prepared to be. And this is where you get Jordan Peterson.
Yeah. That's true, actually.
Well, I mean, it is. It is. You know, and you know, have you seen the way that people are treating him in media? I mean, yeah, of course, he's a fucking idiot. But if I read one more leftist take on why he's a fucking idiot, I'm going to write an even more irritating take about why you're a fucking idiot for writing fucking... And then everyone will say, oh, Helen Ray, they're just telling us how we're doing it wrong. Well, yes, I am fucking telling you how you're doing it wrong, because Marx told me.